Locked On NBA. The biggest stories, the local experts. Every Monday, we dig into the biggest stories in the NBA with the Locked On Podcast Network hosts. Today, we'll stop in Boston to speak with John Corrales of Locked On Celtics about Boston seemingly getting it back on track and the play of Gordon Hayward as he recovers from his broken leg suffered last season. We'll go to Milwaukee to speak with Eric Name of Locked On Bucks about the Bucks' hot start, but a couple of troubling performances over the last couple of games. And lastly, we go to Chicago to speak with Jordan Mailey of Locked On Bulls about the return of Lauri Markkanen and what this Bulls team can expect once their other players, Chris Dunn and Bobby Portis, return from injury. It's all coming up, the biggest stories with the local experts on Locked On NBA.
You are Locked On the NBA, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Hi guys, and welcome to another week of Locked On NBA. I am your Monday host, Josh Lloyd. I'm also the host of the Locked On Fantasy Basketball Podcast and the lead analyst at BasketballMonster.com. We are over 20 games into the NBA season. Some narratives are starting to shake out. Some things starting to appear to be real that may have been a little bit fluky at the start of the season. We're going to touch on some interesting performances in the Eastern Conference today, looking at Boston and Milwaukee, as well as the bottom end of the Eastern Conference with the Chicago Bulls and the return of Lauri Markkanen. So let's get to it. I'm joined now by the host, or one of the hosts, of the Locked On Celtics podcast. Of course, you can hear him here on Locked On NBA as well. It is John Corrales. We're here to talk about the Boston Celtics, who have had, I guess, a little bit of a struggle to begin this season, John. But are we seeing signs of the Celtics start to turn it around over the last few games?
Yeah, a little bit. We're starting to see these guys playing with a little bit more energy, a little bit more focus, a little bit more consistency, which has been the problem for them from the beginning of the season. We're seeing these guys kind of playing with each other, understanding where they're supposed to be offensively and defensively. And I think that had been missing for the first 20 games or so. I think the Jaylen Brown injury, which isn't bad, but he's still out, back spasms and all that, has allowed the Celtics to tinker with that starting lineup in their bench, and it's paid off. So now the question is, how much longer do they ride with Marcus Smart and Marcus Morris as starters, which has seemed to kickstart the Celtics? And will Jaylen Brown be okay on the bench, and how does that play out moving forward?
Well, Jalen's had a quote the other day that he seems to be okay with that role, if that's what it is. He said, when I come back from the injury, I'm happy to stay on the bench. It's just saying the right things. It's important that we win, all those sort of things. But do you actually think that that's coming from an honest place, or is it just giving media platitudes?
I think it's coming from some honesty there. I don't know necessarily what he's feeling inside. I was there. I was watching him say it. He seemed like he was sincere. But we'll have to wait and see. Part of the problem to start the season was that he and Jason Tatum were both kind of going on their own individual kind of missions throughout the game. And I forget who it was that said, maybe it was Brad Stevens that said, I don't think it was from a place of kind of ill intent, that everybody was trying to win, do things to win, but they were starting to do things to win on their own terms. And if you're not doing it on your own, if you're doing it on your own terms, it means you're not doing what's best for the team. So Jaylen, I think, sees that some things are working, and he's not going to be the guy in all of this that's going well to say, well, I got to do something selfish. So part of it might be saying the right things, but part of it is understanding, like, look, if I'm going to do this, if I'm going to be a part of this, I got to do it, whatever they need. And eventually he understands that moving forward, he's going to be a huge piece of the Celtics. He's seen as one of the cornerstones of the next version of Celtics contenders, along with Jason Tatum. So I think big picture, he understands where he stands in the Celtics scheme of things. So a trip to the bench at this point of the season, not the worst thing in the world for him.
Marcus Smart, well, you mentioned he did move into that starting lineup, and he's provided that much needed, I guess, spark, hustle, energy, that sort of stuff, but also being a guy who doesn't need to get his and enabling these other players like Kyrie Irving and Jason Tatum to really, you know, take more control of the offense. But the other move that the Celtics have made, John, is moving Gordon Hayward to the bench with Marcus Morris moving into the starting lineup. And yeah, Hayward's had his struggles, which we all knew there'd be issues, not only with this whole team in terms of meshing, getting, you know, reintegrating Kyrie, but also adding Gordon Hayward to the mix with the evolution of Jason Tatum to see how all this would work together. But Hayward struggled to begin the season. He looked a little bit better off the bench, but last game against the Timberwolves, he had, you know, I don't think anyone could argue his best game of the season. He dropped in 30 points, had 9 rebounds and 8 assists. What looked different to you, apart from obviously him, you know, putting up bigger numbers, but what was different in this game as opposed to some of the early performances where Hayward not only struggled with his shot, but struggled sometimes to even get the shots off or to have, you know, that sort of a larger role in the offense?
It was a level of aggression looking for his own shot, which was a stated goal earlier this week in practice. He and Kyrie Irving and even Brad Stevens had mentioned that they'd hoped and they'd pushed for Gordon Hayward to search out his own shot a little bit more. He's been a fantastic passer, but he admits that he's been passing a little bit too much, and that's ended up kind of a little bit of a backfire effect because teams are playing him to pass so much that they've taken away some of the passing lanes. So now that he's gone out and looked for his own shot, I think that has helped him kind of feel like more of himself. Earlier this week in practice, like last Wednesday, the story came out after the game that they really pushed him hard. Marcus Morris and Marcus Smart were fouling him, tangling up with him, and really pushing his buttons in an effort to get him to kind of react. And he did, and it really pissed them off. And he had a very energetic practice, let's say. And Brad Stevens said after the game that he knew at that moment that was going to lead to a big game. And that's part of what Gordon Hayward needed. He needed kind of like a little spark, a little kick in the ass to go out there and be the Gordon Hayward of old. And no one's going to say that he's back completely yet, but he needed to be much more aggressive to search out his own offense. If you look at that Timberwolves game, the first three he took was a catch and shoot with 20 seconds left in the shot clock. And normally you'd say that's not a shot that you want. You'd probably want to work it out and get a better shot. But for Hayward to feel good enough to take that shot was very, very important. And that kind of set the tone for the type of game he was going to play.
In terms of him having issues still with the leg, he's missed a couple of games with what the Celtics have deemed ankle soreness at times. Do you feel like he's moving a little bit better now as we're a quarter of the way through the season?
Starting to. Some of it is confidence. Some of it is a lack of explosiveness. It seems like he'll have games where his explosiveness is back and then he'll regress. And it's hard to say how much of that is because he just doesn't have it, or how much of it is because he doesn't feel comfortable trying and going for it. So, I mean, I've seen him be very bad around the rim. I've seen him be kind of good around the rim. One thing the Celtics have been doing now twice in the past two games, Cleveland and Minnesota, they ran that same backdoor alley-oop play that he hurt himself on. They ran it once in Denver. So I think three times this season they've run that alley-oop play, twice in the past two games. So they're doing stuff to purposely get him going. They've run a lot of sets, horn sets with him as the main facilitator to try to get him going. So it makes me think that a lot of this is still in his head and still confidence. And they're trying everything they can to pull that out of him. So he'll progress. He's going to get there. I think physically he's got a lot of the tools, and they're saying in practice, they don't let us see this part of practice, but they're saying that he was going after it and dunking like they'd never seen him dunk before as a Celtic. So that's at least a good sign.
Well, the Celtics now push themselves currently into the sixth seed in the Eastern Conference, sitting with a record of 13-10, trying to push their way back into that top four in the Eastern Conference. Of course, John will cover all of that over on Locked On Celtics, and you can hear him here on Locked On NBA as well. John, thanks for jumping on to talk Celtics on Locked On NBA Mondays.
You got it, Josh.
Guys, make sure you're checking out the Locked On Podcast Network social media feeds on both Twitter and on Instagram. It's the same handle, Locked On NBA Net. On Twitter, all of the hosts of all of our individual NBA podcasts are curated into one feed, so you get all the breaking news, injury reports, whatever big story is going on with teams across the NBA, you can get it at that one feed, Locked On NBA Net. And then on Instagram, the biggest stories of the day are condensed into the 60-second Instagram story, so check that out over there, plus longer form stories and clips from our show on the regular feed. So follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Locked On NBA Net. Now we bring in one of the hosts of the Locked On Bucks podcast. It is Eric Name. The Milwaukee Bucks had been flying. You're really putting up some good numbers, but a weird overtime loss to the Knicks over the last couple of days. Eric, maybe sour some of the recent form from Milwaukee. Let's start with that Knicks game. What was it that happened in that game? More specifically, why did Chris Middleton play under 20 minutes in a game they end up losing to the lowly Knicks?
Well, there was no one will ever admit to why he did. After the game, Chris Middleton said, plain and simple, he was benched. But as for the why, there's a sequence at the end of the third quarter I tweeted out where he had a chance at a defensive rebound. It got tipped away. He wasn't able to secure it. And then the guy that had tipped it away, Dotson, ended up getting a three right after, and Middleton didn't close him out very hard. So that happened. And then the very next play, Bucks tried to come down and hit a three before the end of the third quarter, missed it. Transition defense. He allowed Alonzo Trier to get a shot at the basket. Giannis tried to get it from behind, goaltended it, and that basket happened, and he didn't play after that. And as far as anyone can tell, that's the reason why. Like I said, I know we'll get some more questions of Mike Budenholzer and Chris Middleton, and we'll ask some questions, but I would doubt we're actually going to find out anything more than kind of what we found out after the game on Saturday. So that would be that. And as far as why they lost to the Knicks, I think it's pretty simple. 20 of 34 from three. That's that. That's how you can lose to a team. Emmanuel Mudiay, 4-5 from 4-5 from three. I'm trying to think who else had big ones. Damian Dotson was 5-5 from three. Overall, they shot 20-34, 58% from three. Like that, you're just gonna lose. Like that. That's just how it's gonna be. It's interesting to think about kind of what's going on. Bucks net rating still very good. They've lost some close ones, and they've had some outlier shooting performances. Like that is kind of what's happened to them. And I think when those things happen, it's hard to stay the course and say, yeah, what we're doing is right. We're forcing the right shots and these things are happening, because it doesn't feel like it. when a team hits 23s on you, it certainly doesn't feel like you're doing the right thing, but it'll be interesting to see what kind of adjustments they might make going forward.
Now, the Bucks have been one of the toasts of the NBA world, taking a huge improvement from last season, taking it up and having some big wins against the Warriors, one of those wins, sitting comfortably at the moment at the second seed in the Eastern Conference. But I'm going to be play a little bit of devil's advocate here with you, Eric, and have a look. They lost to the Knicks the game before that. They beat the Bulls by only 3 points. They lost to the Hornets. They got over the Spurs only by 6 points, and they lost to the Suns. That's their last five games. So there's a couple of shaky performances in there, I guess. Is there anything to take out of those last five games with a loss to the Suns, a loss to the Knicks, a close victory over the Spurs and the Bulls, both teams who are struggling at the moment, and a loss to the Hornets in there? Is there anything to take out of these games that's different from the start of the season? Are teams playing the Bucks a little bit differently? Is it just a cold streak versus a hot streak for the opponents in terms of shooting? Like, is there anything to take out of these last five games, or am I reading a little bit too much into it?
I think the Phoenix loss was them just not coming out with any energy. Middleton and Bledsoe didn't play with any sort of energy in the first half of that game, and Mike Budenholzer was not happy about that, and eventually they lost that game. Spurs game was pretty tough. Spurs hit a bunch of shots, obviously, when you look at a 135-129 score, but they ended up winning that one. Charlotte, I think, is generally a good team, and the Bucks had a whole lot of chances to win that one late and just didn't have shots fall. Bulls, strangely, a team that they've struggled against both both times this year, but ended up getting a win. And then that next game, obviously, I talked about that outlier performance. So I think the only thing that kind of comes from those five games is really how this team is going to deal with getting the right shots but missing them. Because at this point, their offense is pretty much Giannis dunking the ball and Giannis creating and them getting a bunch of open threes. And, you know, when that goes in, it feels like they're going to score 140 every night. And when those shots don't go in, it feels, you know, just kind of deflating because they keep getting open looks. So I think the only thing to take is, you know, sometimes stuff like that is going to happen and we'll see how they react to it. And then also Chris Middleton has kind of had a little bit of a rough stretch here. And I'm curious to see, you know, how he kind of gets out of it, because when you look at this Bucks offense, you went from Chris really having the ball a lot last year. He had the ball in his hands. He was able to do some playmaking, to the playmaking and Eric Bledsoe, and it's obviously worked very well. And obviously we've seen Chris Middleton start to shoot a lot more threes, so his role has really changed a lot, and he's still putting up good numbers. But everything may not be quite all right there, and obviously, you know, getting benched for the fourth quarter in overtime in a game that, you know, you I think at the end of the year you're probably gonna look back on and say, man, I really wish you know, we would have won that game against the Knicks. Like, I would assume that would be what every Bucks player says at the end of the year. So to me, that's kind of the only interesting thing there. I think everything's pretty similar to what they're doing. Maybe they run Brook Lopez off the line a little bit more than they used to. But for the most part, they're still getting a bunch of threes. They're still shooting a bunch of threes. To me, it really has been just kind of some bad luck and some outlier shooting performances.
What do you what in your opinion, what is the biggest surprise in terms of rotation contributions this season? Is it the fact that Pat Connaughton is getting almost 20 minutes a night at the moment and he's, you know, providing to be an integral part of this team? Or is it the fact that Dante DiVincenzo, after, you know, really struggling in summer league, albeit, you know, with a groin injury, has come in and is a regular nightly part of the rotation, pushing someone who I thought would have a pretty big second year, Sterling Brown, out of the rotation? Matthew Dellavedova's not playing. Tony Snell's role has been basically cut in half because DiVincenzo and Connaughton have really stepped up. Who's been the biggest surprise to you out of those two?
Yeah, I mean, I think DiVincenzo has to be the biggest surprise because, you know, on Locked On Bucks, we kind of went into the season saying, hey, Pat Connaughton played 82 games last year, and he did so on a playoff team. And again, like, you can talk about the Blazers and say how good they are, what that may mean, but he played 82 games, and he played almost 20 minutes a game in those 82. So that guy's an NBA rotation player. Like, I didn't think there's really any doubt of that going into the season. And going into the season, we knew how much Mike Budenholzer liked Dante DiVincenzo, but, you know, I think sometimes coaches can fall in love with, you know, their first rounder for that year and start to think like, oh, you know, this guy really should get some playing time. And I think we all kind of figured it would kind of shake out to a spot where Dante wouldn't end up playing all that much anymore. Like, maybe at the start of the season he would get some looks, and then he wouldn't hit some jumpers, which he has struggled with. You know, he wouldn't hit threes and he wouldn't be able to find a way to contribute, and then Connaughton would kind of take over that spot. But DiVincenzo just kind of keeps finding ways to impact games despite struggling from the three-point line at this point. And he to Pat Connaughton's credit, he's the same way. Like, those two guys, I had tweeted out the Spider-Man meme the other day when there was a missed shot and both Pat Connaughton and Dante DiVincenzo went up for the offensive rebound and just barely ended up not getting it. It was like, okay, those two guys, like, that's kind of their thing, trying to find a way to impact the games in other ways and, you know, make an impact. And, you know, Connaughton's going to hit probably 35-40% of his threes. DiVincenzo, not quite there yet, but both those guys just find a way to make an impact on games.
And that's the thing, that both of these guys, they're having an impact and they're not actually shooting that well. 31.8% for Connaughton, and DiVincenzo is just at 26.3% from three. So some significant room for improvement. Said what guys really, you know, providing key roles for this Bucks team who's looking to solidify themselves in the top four and perhaps the top two of the Eastern Conference. Of course, Eric will have all your Bucks information over on Locked On Bucks, so make sure you're listening and subscribing over there. Eric, thanks for jumping on Locked On NBA.
Thanks for having me, Josh.
If your business is looking for a new way to reach customers, you should consider advertising on podcasts, including your favorite podcast, this one, Locked On NBA. Podcast listeners are 60% more likely to interact with the sponsors that they hear on the podcast that they listen to. Our demographic is 98% male, higher educated, higher earning than your traditional media audiences. So if you think that that would be something that your company would be looking to target, why don't you email me at redrockfantasybasketball@gmail.com and we can get you guys sponsoring this podcast. Now we bring in one of the hosts of the Locked On Bulls podcast. Jordan Maley is here to discuss this Chicago team who hasn't been the greatest of seasons for them so far. I don't think many people expected great things, but there's a couple of things we do need to talk about with this team, Jordan. Number one is the season debut of Lauri Markkanen, who returned across the weekend after missing the start of the season with that elbow issue. How did Lauri look in his first game for the year?
Yeah, I was a little disappointed, and maybe my expectations were slightly a bit too high, but considering he came off the bench last night too, which was an odd decision by Fred Hoiberg and the coaching staff, but nonetheless, 10 points on 4-14 shooting, 2 of 6 from 3, he had 4 rebounds and a steal and a block. So for the most part, I think he's just got to get back into game shape and learn how to kind of play with the starters, and that's something else too, is Fred Hoiberg kind of transitioned what he did last night and let Lauri play with some of the starters more so than coming off the bench and realizing he probably shouldn't be playing with guys like Cameron Payne and learning how to play with the second unit. So yeah, it's going to take a little bit of time for Markkanen to get adjusted, but it's exciting nonetheless to have him back.
What's the update on the other injured Bulls? We know that Denzel Valentine's going to be out for the rest of the season, but Chris Dunn and Bobby Portis, Dunn's only played the one game, and Portis started off the season, and both the guys out with MCL injuries. When are we looking to get those guys back into the lineup?
Yeah, it sounded like Chris Dunn and Bobby Portis, barring no setbacks, were supposed to participate in some type of contact practice this coming week. They haven't named it a specific day. I think we were a little thrown off too by Lauri Markkanen's return too. They brought him back quicker than I think a lot of people thought. So that brings good hope with some of these other guys. If they're feeling no pain and if they're making that type of progress, we should be able to see them back maybe in about a week and a half, 2 weeks. So barring no setbacks, if they go into contact practice this week and do that over the weekend, maybe we even see them as early as next week.
Now, the Bulls are obviously struggling at the moment, 5-19, just one game ahead of the Cleveland Cavaliers for last place in the Eastern Conference. But of course, these injuries have been pretty significant. Three, if not starters, at least rotation players. A couple of positives, though, I do want to talk about with this team, and number one of those is Zach LaVine, who's averaging 25 points per game this season, taking on a really significant load, 32% usage for the season. The efficiency's not great, but it's also not terrible. True shooting of 55%. He's handling the ball. He's exceeded my expectations. Has he exceeded what you expected out of Zach this season?
Yeah, I think the bounce in his step is something that I was surprised to see come back so quickly. You know, last year we saw in the 25 games that he played, he didn't have that extra burst of speed that we saw with Minnesota pre-ACL injury. And so, you know, he made it a statement to let all Bulls fans and everybody that was watching him this summer to realize that he was putting in work every single day. And that bounce came right back. The athleticism is there and maybe even more. I was talking to somebody else a little while ago and saying, you know, Zach looks like he might have added a little bit of athleticism post-ACL injury. But on top of that, he's being asked to be the distributor, the main scorer on this team, the guy that's going to get you to the line, and ultimately the guy that's going to take shots down the line. So he's exceeded every expectation that I have for him, and he's been way more aggressive on the defensive side of the ball. And while Zach's bar as far as where his defense goes, it can only go up from where it was last year and the start of his career. So I've been pleasantly surprised with Zach LaVine, and now getting Lauri Markkanen back into this lineup I think should help him a ton with his efficiency and being able to have somebody else, a secondary scorer that the Bulls have been so desperately missing this season.
Yeah, outside of the one game that Chris Dunn played, LaVine is leading this team in assists as well, 4.7 per game. The next highest is Ryan Arcidiacono at 4 per game. So, yeah, a real surprise that he is taking on more of that distribution role as well and succeeding in it. And the load, again, is going to be lightened when these other players return. The other bright spot for Chicago this season, Jordan, is the play of rookie Wendell Carter Jr., who started from opening night. Again, that's not something I expected at the start of the season. I thought that he would be a starter at some point, but not from opening night. He's had his battles with foul trouble. And that's sort of limited his playing time in a lot of these games. But I don't think we can be anything but impressed with how comfortable he looks out there on the court. What's been the biggest maybe surprise with what you've seen from Wendell Carter so far this season?
Totally agree. I think inserting him in the defensive presence that he has and just picking up little things, like I know the guys over at The Athletic had mentioned, you know, his ability to pick up on little things like not staying in the paint too long and playing a tag process of where he's getting out of the paint and then coming back in to reassert himself on the defensive side. Little things that NBA fans might not pick out for a 19-year-old to be picking up on. Robin Lopez has said the same thing. He's like, Wendell is so smart, and he's a guy that picks up on everything. So on top of that, just the rebounding coming in has been spotty so far, and same thing with his shooting. I think on nights where he has an offensive explosion, it's because him and LaVine are sort of clicking. We saw that on Friday night against Detroit, where Wendell posted his season high in 28 points and 7 rebounds, and him and Zach were playing really well together, even though that was lost. So I've been very, very happy with what Wendell Carter Jr. has been able to provide with these Bulls this season so far. The only downside to his game is him staying out of foul trouble, man. That's been the biggest thing about Wendell Carter Jr., and when he's off the floor, the Bulls are awful defensively. So staying out of foul trouble is going to be key for him continuing through this season.
Yeah, that's been a real problem for him. I think it's been over the last like 2 to 3 weeks. He's barely been able to get to 30 minutes a night just because he gets those early fouls, and that really limits what he's been able to do. I guess the surprise player is a guy that, you know, maybe won't be even on the Bulls by the end of the season. That's Justin Holiday, who's slotted in. He's playing a ton of minutes at small forward, but he is, you know, providing a solid, you know, almost the definition of a 3-and-D type of player. Do you think that this is going to result in him, you know, being gone? By the time we hit end of February, he won't be on this team?
It should, and this was the most heated debate that Matt Peck and I on Locked On Bulls had on our episode on Friday. We were talking about Kyle Korver's value and what the Cleveland Cavaliers were able to get for him, and how looking at Justin Holiday's usage and looking at the minutes he played this season, and also looking at his three-point percentage, which is one of his career bests, looking all of that and putting that together and looking at all the playoff teams and who might need a 3-and-D type of wing, I think Justin Holiday should at least be able to command a pair of second-round picks. And my co-host disagrees with me completely. He said we'll be lucky to get one second-round pick for Justin Holiday. We should be satisfied with that. Obviously, my argument isn't helped with Justin Holiday's performance this weekend. Played really bad on Friday night against Detroit and didn't help himself out against the Rockets on Saturday. So if he continues to flirt around 40% from the three, I think there is clear value for there because think about it. Kyle Korver, yeah, 46% from three is outrageous and ridiculous, but think about how much just that commanded. So if he can hang around the 40% marker from three, I think he's going to have some value on the trade market.
So there's going to be some, obviously, moves happening with this Bulls team. It's going to be interesting to see how they can reintegrate Portis and Dunn alongside with, you know, the surprise performances of LaVine and Carter. So some stuff to watch for as Bulls fans as well, even if the season isn't going the direction that many of them would have hoped that it would have gone. But you and Matt will have that covered over on Locked On Bulls. So, Jordan, thank you for jumping on to Locked On NBA and discussing the Chicago Bulls.
Thanks, Josh. Have a good one.
That does it for another episode of Locked On NBA. Make sure you are subscribing to this podcast, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, TuneIn, Stitcher, and on Spotify. And if you could leave us a 5-star rating and review, that would be fantastic. Follow us on the socials at Locked On NBA Net. And you can find me on Twitter at RedRock_BBall. Guys, we are done here. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.